Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We are looking at a few conversations I had at Acton University 2025, opening with a conversation I had with Ali Ghaffari. Now, Ali is the executive director for the St. John Henry Newman Institute. He's also the founder and president of Divine Mercy Academy. Ali is a convert to the faith, an autodidact, and he's deeply immersed in the heritage of the classical liberal arts tradition and the intellectual tradition at large. The reason why you and I have to become cognizant of this great heritage is because for most of us, the only kind of educational system we've ever received is one that was completely robbed of the transcendental and therefore a STEM-based education, one that trains us to think that nothing transcendental is of utilitarian value. And mind you, many of you listening right now might well have been some of those people who made those decisions of educating your own children or yourselves. Because, I mean, what kind of a job would a philosophy degree get you versus an engineering degree? And while that is a truly valid concern, education at its greatest end, its final end, is not about a paycheck. It's not about the job that one has. We educate for the sake of one's eternal salvation. We think, we form the intellect for the sake of thinking rightly about all things. And only the classical liberal arts education, as founded in the fullness of truth in the Catholic Church, provides that framework necessary for the flourishing of the human soul unto eternal life in education. And so Ali and I are going to talk about that. We go on from there to speak with Dr. James Patterson. He's an old friend of mine from Ave Maria University. He is now teaching at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And we will be talking about this question of post-liberalism. Now, They're big words, post-liberalism and integralism. Now, what this simply means is that the argument is being made that liberalism in general, individual liberty, has failed. And so post-liberalism is a movement from scholars that are trying to argue that what the United States and the world needs really is that each nation is run by the Catholic Church. And so the Catholic Church creates the political system that allows for human flourishing. Now, there's a lot of reasons why this can be bad. And so we talk about this and a virtuous movement forward. All this after the headlines.
Thank you, Marcus, and good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Tuesday, July 8th. It's the Feast of St. Killian. And today's news is brought to you by Ave Maria University. Your vocation location is at avemaria.edu. The number of dead in the Central Texas floods is surpassing 100. Search and recovery efforts are now in their fifth day, and officials say first responders have faced extremely treacherous conditions. There are still five campers and one counselor missing from a girls' camp in Kerr County, where 27 girls and counselors died. While there's a chance for some rain today, the region is forecast to get a break from storms. Israel is working with the U.S. to find countries that would take in Palestinians displaced in Gaza. That's according to the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Speaking at a White House dinner with President Trump yesterday, Netanyahu said that if Palestinians want to stay, they can stay. But if they want to leave, Gaza shouldn't be a prison. More U.S. weapons will be on the way to Ukraine. President Trump made the remarks at the White House dinner with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. This comes after the administration had paused some weapons shipments to Ukraine over concerns the U.S. military stockpile was being depleted. Trump said Monday the Ukrainians have to be able to defend themselves, and the U.S. would be sending primarily defensive weapons. And there's been dozens of UFO sightings across New York so far this year. According to the National UFO Reporting Center, there have been 66 reports of unidentified flying objects across the state. The reports have come from Manhattan, Rochester, and many other locations. There were six UFO sightings in June alone, with one person reporting they saw a metallic ball fly slightly under their airplane while flying over New York City. From the AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Dan McGraw.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. We are opening by talking with Ali Ghaffari. This is revisiting another conversation I had at Acton University 2025. This conversation has to do with creating an engaging and enriching culture at Catholic schools, because we really have seen a problem in Catholic education. Primarily, this having to do with Catholic education moving away from classical liberal arts education. And now there's a move back. Ali is the executive director of the St. John Henry Newman Institute and founder and president of the Divine Mercy Academy. Ali, thank you for joining us. How are you?
It's great to be here. Having a great day. Thank you.
Well, it's hard not to have a great day.
It is. It's such good, amazing people, just great talks. It's a wonderful place to be.
Before we go on to talk about the work of Catholic, especially classical liberal arts education, you have quite the story coming into an appreciation of the heritage that is the intellectual tradition and classical education. So for the interest of our listeners, would you mind sharing that?
Yes, it's a long story, but I'll give you the short version of it. Grew up essentially in a loving home, but a home that was, we went to public school and became an atheist very early on in life, and then was immersed in the quote-unquote the best of progressive education, that went to a private school in Massachusetts, and then to a college up in Maine, that were just immersed in all of this. And I had no idea that this form of education existed, or that truth existed. I had no faith. And it was only encountering the classics with Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, and then coming face to face with the church's intellectual tradition, the full brunt of it, that it brought me from the darkness and unhappiness of atheism to the bright joy and light of the church, and of happiness, and living just an incredible life. I've got a great, incredible wife, and I have four daughters, and I love the Catholic Church and love being Catholic. And so this education, beginning with the classics, helped form me in a way that I'm just so grateful for.
If you don't mind me asking, what was the faith tradition of your family or extended family?
So I was raised technically Methodist. So I was baptized in the United Methodist Church, and I went to confirmation classes in the Methodist Church, but quickly dropped that when I went away, separated from my family, and went away for high school.
Got it. Well, you and I have similar stories then. Yeah. I was raised Catholic, quickly dropped off, became a militant atheist, and studied my way back into the Catholic
Church.
Wow,
I'd love to hear that.
Now, given all of that, your journey into the appreciation of this wondrous heritage didn't come easy. And so the work that you do now is born out of a zeal for not having had this before and seeing its immense value. Yeah. I'd like to springboard from there to talk about the modern denigration of the education system. Mm. Ever since Dewey especially, we've completely butchered the meaning of education in the societal sphere.
Yes. So John Dewey, for those who maybe are less familiar with him and the work that he and the Frankfurt socialists at Columbia Teachers College did, they essentially sought to create a socialist revolution through our educational system and to change the aim and the goal of it from human formation to form us to be saints and scholars to essentially form us to become slaves, in many ways slaves of the state, and easily manipulated by the state and cogs in this with the state as the god, and for us to fit in this materialistic and I would say numbed life, and so to take away our ability to think for ourselves. And so that went on through the 1900s and into the, and I think we're seeing very much the rotten fruit of that today. And so, you know, what we're doing in the St. John Henry Newman Institute is to go back to the sources. And this is interesting. I learned this in the last couple of years, was that this renewal of education has happened in the church roughly every 500 years. So there is a springboard where we begin with the classical sources, the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans, and then with the Incarnation, Christ brought the beautiful things, the best of the Greeks and Romans, and united with the Jewish faith into himself, and changed the end from human flourishing to sanctity and sainthood. And so that's provided about a 500-year springboard, and then education decayed, and then there was time for a new renewal. And this happened several times, and we are at that crux right now between the end of the decay of one and the renewal of another one. And it's a great privilege to be a part of this movement at this incredibly exciting time.
I love that. I love the optimism, and I also agree with you. We are seeing the decline wrought by an overtly liberalistic culture. Mm. And this isn't a critique on classical liberalism. This is liberalism that has completely jettisoned the sources of goodness, truth, and beauty. Mm. Now, considering the work that you do at the Newman Institute, we can see that the work of classical education really boils down to the formation of especially intellectual virtues. Mm. John Henry Newman in The Idea of a University talks about once you form these habits of the mind, they last a lifetime. Mm-hmm. I want to invite you to talk about the benefit of classical education doing that, but also critique how we are in STEM-based education, even in Catholic institutions, where we don't train habits of the mind.
Yes, yeah, there's a lot there. But what I love about classical Catholic education, we call it a perennial Catholic education, the St. John Henry Newman Institute, what we're referring to is the greatest form human formation one could possibly have in the history. It's the handing on of the greatest fruits from one tradition, from one generation to the next. And I've seen this with my own eyes. In my background, I started a Catholic school, a K-8 school called Divine Mercy Academy in Pasadena, Maryland, with this type of formation in it. And these children are so joyful, and they love learning, and they're so curious. And for me personally, the school system just crushed my willingness and interest in learning, my curiosity. By the time I was done, I didn't want to crack open another book. It took me years before I wanted to read again. But this education is the opposite of that. It takes advantage of the natural curiosity. Right. And it doesn't stop. It doesn't say, this is a class on science, and we're not talking about history. We're not talking about politics. We're not talking about religion. Rather, smashes through those barriers that we artificially put on there. And the result of those barriers that we put on the education, I taught at the Naval Academy for a while, and so they have amazing students there at the Naval Academy. But what I found was it's a STEM-heavy school. And so the students there could do amazing things in math and science, but they couldn't write an essay. They couldn't make a logical argument. It was very difficult for them to see through the haze of the propaganda out there in the world. And so I think what we lose with this progressive education is the ability to think clearly and the ability to integrate topics, because we're so used to stovepiping the knowledge, and it's just learning the facts. What do I need to learn to take this test? And then I flush it and I move on, right? As opposed to going deeply and just really truly understanding the content that we're learning and loving it, and then learning how to love, to love learning, and then on our own, naturally digging in and then being curious and wanting to expand our knowledge base, and how does this connect to this thing over here, right? And so that is the beauty of this education.
So in essence, and you're pointing this out rightly, I know this to be true myself, what we've created for ourselves is not only a deeply fragmented system of education, it's also created a deeply myopic system of education. Mm-hmm. We teach to the test.
Yes.
Children become so utilitarian in their learning, mm-hmm. and that's what kills and stifles creativity, ingenuity, innovation, and enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it also teaches to the lowest common denominator.
Yes.
Right? It is the lowest, what is the bare minimum that we need to pass? And then teachers teach to the bare minimum. Teachers are handcuffed with what they can teach. They're not allowed to teach, right? Yep. They're allowed to.
They just convey
the basic information. You just have to do that. And then you're evaluated on how well your students perform on this test, right? So we've handcuffed our teachers, prevented them from doing the thing that they love doing. We're teaching our children to the lowest common denominator. And so they're not learning what they need to learn. They're learning things that are uninteresting and have nothing to do with human flourishing and becoming the best version of themselves. Rather, they're practically minded, which is something that the kids, they don't like learning those things. It's not good for them. Rather, they ought to be aiming at something much higher. And then those other things come alongside naturally, the natural byproducts. But if we aim too low, that's what we end up with. We end up with students who are the bare minimum, which is the reason why our educational scores and the formation of our students have continually declined over the last 30, 40 years.
I want to continue this conversation on the other side of the break. I've been talking with Ali Ghaffari, Executive Director of the St. John Henry Newman Institute. You can learn more about his work at jhni.org. We're talking about the wondrous benefits of a classical liberal arts education. And this isn't just a system for the sake of a system. This is ordered towards the flourishing of the human soul unto eternal life. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Are you paying high prices with a traditional health insurance company that pays for things that violate your conscience? There's an alternative available. Solidarity HealthShare is a community of faithful individuals and families that never share into immoral medical services, all while saving you money with prices starting as low as $85 per month for singles and $512 for families. Never fund another abortion with your healthcare dollars. Call 844-313-4999 to learn more.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm blessed to have encountered a new friend, a man who has a similar vision and heart for the education of the person towards the flourishing of the soul in this life and in the next. He is Ali Ghaffari. He is the executive director of the St. John Henry Newman Institute. Learn more about his work at jhni.org. Ali, when we left off, you had just painted for us this amazing picture. Now, some people might say it's idealistic, and the reason why is because we haven't had an image like this since the 60s. Well, okay, to be very honest, since the rationalistic revolt, the Enlightenment, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We were taught that reason triumphs everything. Mm-hmm. There is no transcendent.
Right.
And then we ordered our education system to value human beings based on test scores and eventually your paycheck.
Yes.
As one who's at the forefront of meeting students and parents, I want to invite you to speak to how damaging that system has been to souls.
Yeah, it's a system that is naturally atheistic,
right.
And it's naturally materialistic. And when you tell children this is a utilitarian education, then they start to wonder, why do I have to know this, right? What is the purpose of this? You need to learn this to take the test,
yep.
Right? And then they don't value the knowledge that they're learning, right? And so they become despairing, and the education becomes something that they just have to do, that they're forced to do. And so there's no buy-in from the students. And so that was why in public schools you see kids not playing video games, right, or not showing up to school or not giving their best. It's because they're not bought in. They're not being invested in as a result of that. But what I've seen conversely in this form of education, this perennial Catholic education, is complete buy-in by the kids, and then an elevation of expectation. So at Divine Mercy Academy, we have kindergartners, four and five-year-olds. And one of the things they do over the course of a year is they learn the entire salvation history from the very beginning all the way to the 20th century. And they learn something over 125 different events in history, and they just go one after another with the event, with the date, with an action, and they're singing it, and they do this for, this thing takes probably 5 to 7 minutes of continuous memorization that these 4 and 5 year old kids do together in a group in mass, all in unison. It's absolutely breathtaking to see, and it brings tears to my eyes every time I see it, because we often think that children that young can't do these things,
yep,
right?
That's what we're told.
Absolutely. They just need to sit down and behave and color this thing or whatever, and we just put them in a box. But it's a very anti-human education. those children love memorizing things. They love knowing things, even if they don't understand all the details of a particular situation. What we're providing for them is a framework that they can then rely on as they're understanding and learning more about history and how things interact with one another. They can then come back to that over and over again. It doesn't have to simply be a historical time. It can be poetry that can enrich their soul over the course of their life, or a story, a fable, something of that nature that they can always return to, a song, something that even in the darkest depths of a prison, or in the depths of if things are going terribly wrong in their life, they can go back and they can lean on that, because it's something they'll always have with them that nourishes their soul and enriches them. And so this has been so beautiful that these kids now go back and they form and inspire their parents.
Right.
Many of their parents have stopped going to Mass. They just don't have faith, but they know they want something better for their kids. And then the kids come back and enrich their lives as a family. So it's absolutely incredible to see.
I'm reminded of, again, John Henry Newman, his idea of a university. He talks about how the entire purpose of an education is to form a high culture of the mind. Mm. But he's not talking about just for university students. His argument was any institution of learning results in high cultures of the mind in the surrounding community. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing that anymore. There's no high culture of the mind. In fact, universities have become these pits of depravity, moral as mm-hmm. well as intellectual.
Yes.
And now you're telling me that 4- and 5-year-olds are memorizing and dialoguing these amazing truths of salvation history mm-hmm. and how that interplays with real life today. It's very clear the soul was made for this.
It is. You're absolutely right. And the reason for this is that, and Newman talks about this in his work, Idea of a University, is that theology is the center of all of this, right? What we've done is we've taken out the heart. We've ripped the heart out of education by separating the theology from the sciences, from the arts, and we expect that this is going to continue to work as a system, and it's not, right? It just basically shatters the whole and fragments, as you mentioned before, fragments the educational system, but we're not fragmented. We're integrated human beings, right? And it abuses the way we are as humans and how we learn. And so it's a very anti-human form of education. And so then as this progresses from year to year, it just gets worse and worse. And we create clever devils at the very best of things, right? And so, and we haven't formed their morality, right? If we've taken God out of it, where's the moral formation?
Right.
Right. So you simply have the intellectual formation and it's slanted in the STEM, for example, right? So they're excellent computers. They compute things very well, but there's very little else that they've done well. Yep. Their character is not formed. They can't speak very well. They can't communicate, right? All these things have not been developed appropriately. So what we need to do is we need to put the theology back in. And so that's the beautiful thing about this type of education is God is properly placed at the center of the education. And he's in his proper place in all of the subjects. They come together. And God's creation is the formation. It's the foundation of the knowledge. That we go bring the children outside and say, what do you notice out here?
Right.
What do you hear? What do you see? Right. And this God created all of these things, and it naturally comes back to theology. In addition, we're talking about the saints, and we're bringing the children to a rich liturgy, and so they're integrating all of this is coming in, and they're developing the habits of a saint, and they're learning what it is to live a fully integrated life that is in communion with God and forming a relationship with God. And so the result is out of this world. It's absolutely amazing, and I'm sad and angry for not having received this formation myself, and so many others are as well, but our children are going to be far better off than we are.
Yep. And that's the hope. That's what we have to fight for. I fight for that for my children for the exact same reason. And one thing you said that really stuck out to me too was, just given the background that I come from, so you borrow from the thought of people like especially Josef Pieper, but to some degree, Wittgenstein and his philosophy of word and language. You learn a premise that the refinement of speech is indicative of the refinement of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And conversely, therefore, the coarsening of speech is indicative of the coarsening of the soul. I've been to STEM college prep institutions. I've worked in some of them. You see a ubiquitous coarsening of language, of conduct.
Yes.
And what you're talking about is articulate language from a young age, because not just because it's expected, but because they're capable of it.
Yes. Yeah, and here's the thing, too, and I can speak personally, because when I went away to high school and college, my language coarsened, and my behavior coarsened, my soul. I was a worse person having graduated from high school and college than I was when I entered it.
Yeah.
The thing that's just beautiful about this classical education, this perennial education, is we show them models, right? We show them the very best of poetry, the very best writings, the very best exemplars of people, how people live. And so the children look to that as their example, right? And they say, this is what it looks like.
Right.
And then they seek to try to emulate that
right.
themselves. And they learn from the best, and then they become who they are more properly in God's unique vocation for each one of us and our own gifts and talents. But what do we look like in the idea of sanctity? What is that?
Gosh. Okay, so we've got about a minute left in the segment. When you think about Newman and the idea of a university once again, I've drawn from that quite a bit today. I didn't mean to. It's just a lot of what you're saying resonates with it. He talks about how the church feels no knowledge. Mm-hmm. We've been taught yes. by a STEM secularist education that the church is antithetical to reason and mm-hmm. knowledge. For parents listening right now, a word of illumination.
Yes, nothing can be further from the truth. This is actually a new idea. Over the last 500 years, has this been the idea that the two are contrary
yes.
to one another? If you go back in history or just understand how faith and reason work together, they're meant to be paired together and they're not contradictory with one another. That's what we need to go back to, that understanding that they actually augment each other and they're meant to work in an integrated form. And then through that integration, your education just really unlocks and becomes something other than it currently is right now in our disintegrated society.
Ali, it's been a tremendous joy talking with you. Thank you very much. We'll talk in the future for sure.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
My guest has been Ali Ghaffari, Executive Director of the St. John Henry Newman Institute. You can learn more about his work at jhni.org. And they're bringing about a revitalization, but also a reestablishment of a higher way of learning, which is the classical way of learning, what the church has always called for. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
Support for this Ave Maria radio program comes in part by the non-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Are you shopping for mortgage products, Catholic investing, Catholic health, real estate, or estate planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for these needs. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. More information at StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US1.
St. Therese once told her sister Celine that when we trust ourselves and not God, our soul becomes barren and incapable of virtue. Her remedy? External works of charity. We all try to do it on our own sometimes without asking for God's help. At St. Paul Evangelization, we suggest sharing the gospel with someone who needs it. Check out streetevangelization.com to find a team near you where you can share the love of Jesus. If there isn't one in your area yet, perhaps God is calling you to start a team in your city. To learn more, visit streetevangelization.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Have you ever been so grief-stricken and so heartsick that you can't see God? You can't see God in the tragedy. You can't see God in that cross. You can't see God in that sin. Why? You're enveloped in that grief. You're enveloped in fear. And God is out the window. You don't see Him standing right next to you.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
Do you ever wish you had more breaks from the daily demands of kids, chores, and work? Getting time for yourself is important, but a better way to stave off parental burnout is by examining how we manage our daily stress. Ask yourself this: are you able to ask for help from your family, or do you just passively, and maybe resentfully, meet everyone else's demands? Do you have routines that create a good flow in your day? Or do you find yourself constantly running from one mini crisis to the next? The Liturgy of Domestic Church Life helps families create relationships, routines, and rituals that tame the craziness, make life easier on everyone, especially mom and dad. And when you do get a break, you'll be able to enjoy it more, too. To learn more about the Liturgy of Domestic Church Life, check out our books, Parenting Your Kids with Grace and Parenting Your Teens and Tweens with Grace, or visit CatholicHOM.com. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm looking at a conversation I had at Acton University 2025 with Dr. James Patterson about the question of post-liberalism and integralism. Now, these are big words. We're going to define them in the segment. Catholics need to be conversant about them. James, thank you for making the time. How are you?
Great to see you again, Dr. Peter.
It's the honor is completely mine. You were one of the first people I met when I got to Ave, and I remember asking you if you were the Patterson who wrote all those novels.
I get that, and I always tell people I will sign them. And you can say James Patterson signed them, and it won't get you in any trouble.
Well, the answer you gave me was, do I look like I have his money?
I must have been in a mood. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. I thought it was hilarious. Okay, so let's talk about certain concepts here. We can all acknowledge that neoliberalism, and by that I mean ideological liberalism, has become a tremendous pain as it pertains to social trust and therefore social capital, social cohesion. And we're seeing this made manifest in the breakdown of public discourse, the complete partisan divide. It's almost understandable why especially Catholics of a traditional intellectual lean posit post-liberalism and neo-integralism. Those are problems, though.
Yeah.
And we need to understand these terms and understand why these would be detrimental. So I want to begin there.
So, I mean, it's a great place to start. It's also pretty challenging. So when we talk about liberalism as a problem, this is something the church started to deal with in the 19th century, is that liberalism, as the church condemns it, posits freedom without a final end.
That's right.
We find our final end in our blessed Lord.
Right.
And a lot of the people advocating for what became known as liberalism posited that you determined for yourself what that final end would be.
So it's freedom without virtue, without reason, without morality.
And so it makes sense that if you were living that way of life, that you would have a very hard time achieving things like a community or purpose for that community, or any sense of social trust, because everyone's in it for themselves. So there's very low chances of trust. Now, the thing is, one other tradition that falls under the term liberalism, even though it kind of is its own thing, I would be more likely to call it republicanism, is a desire for there to be people who are citizens having the opportunity to select their representatives, and for there to be a constitution that sets the rules for political governance. And that's been the tradition that sometimes gets combined with the idea of living as though there were no final end. So what post-liberals want to argue is that these two are the same, and so we need to have an authoritarian government essentially fix all the problems of loss of community or loss of faith.
And so these problems, these two things that you define, as we mentioned earlier, you've got ideological liberalism, but the other thing you mentioned sometimes makes the waves as neoconservatism, right?
Yes.
Or neo-republicanism. So we've got these issues being made manifest in the public sphere, and really it's coming to a breakdown due to a breakdown of reason as it pertains to a political function in the state. Now, in your book, What is Post-Liberalism?, you... In this one paragraph, you frame a kind of three-pronged definition of understanding post-liberalism. I wonder if you can just make that succinct for us.
So post-liberalism is an ideology that attempts to resuscitate a kind of right-wing nationalism of Europe and Latin America that looks not to the people or to a well-formed citizenry or even necessarily the church, but rather to an authoritarian dictator whose ability to wield political power will abolish all of the bad institutions and replace them with good institutions. Right. And by the time you are making those appeals, you know things have really gone wrong, because we should know better than this being something that anyone could actually achieve. And there's a kind of a history of attempts to do this in the in Europe and in Latin America, and it's a very bad one. The second feature is a sort of like loose group of political institutions that are trying to form people to think this way. And they often ground it in terms of sort of retrieving a traditional faith, that we're not doing this for any kind of political cause, but we're doing it for the common good. But then when they identify who it is that is the problem for the common good, they spend a lot of time talking about them and not so much about what the common good is. And then the third is that these educational institutions are working kind of with political parties, and the political parties are primarily in Europe, and you know they have their focus locus around Viktor Orban in Hungary, but there's also like Matteo Salvini in Italy and Marion Maréchal in France, and there's some sort of linkages here in the United States. Probably the person who's closest to this movement is Vice President J.D. Vance.
Mm-hmm. And even as you share all of that, there's this overflow, and the two go hand in hand, we know this, and that's neo-integralism.
Mm-hmm.
So really, if we're looking at it, it's a thinly veiled call for a constitutional neo-Christendom.
Yes.
So just tell us, who are the people calling for it? Why is it a problem? And why is it unworkable in our constitutional republic?
So on the surface, this sounds great. It would be wonderful if in the United States we had a supermajority of Americans who were faithful Catholics and sought to raise up a Christian culture that would facilitate people, you know, pursuing the common good and ultimately achieving, you know, by the grace of God, you know, heaven after death.
Right.
But the real issue here is that neo-integralism, what it does is it places the authority of the state as the primary means for pursuing that end over and against the rights of individuals. In fact, they dispute that individuals have any rights to resist.
Right, right.
In addition, they also stipulate that religious minorities, people who are not Catholic, don't have a right to resist either.
That's right.
And in the case of what we would consider, that what they would consider neo-integralists dissenting Christians, so here meaning Protestants and Orthodox, that the state would actually have the full authority under Catholic doctrine to force them into like some kind of conversion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where, you know, once the rubber meets the road, there's a lot of problems with this. There's a really great philosopher named Kevin Valier who's actually gone through.
Yes, I just spoke with him.
Yes, and he details what the philosophical problems are with this. But in our book, it's more about the historical ones and how what Kevin said would happen actually already has.
Uh-huh.
And so the problem with the Constitution is that if this, it is it opens up the possibility of freedom, and freedom means that sometimes people aren't going to choose what's good.
Right.
But as it turns out, when you use coercion to try to force them, they're not choosing the good then either, because they're not choosing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you think of authors like Thomas Howes, right, Why Integralism Failed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just you, it's not just Kevin, who are at the forefront of making sure that this conversation makes it to the public discourse.
Mm-hmm.
We've known for some time now.
Yeah.
Howes talks about how Christendom was functional for a time, but by itself, it was inherently unstable, and it was doomed to be the source of its own failure. So 1930 Brazil, we had Franco Spain, we had Ireland, we had Quebec. We've seen time and time again why any form of a neo-integralism winds up being the cause of its own demise. Why is it so attractive?
So it's attractive because it solves a lot of problems for the institutions. So if you have a strong church, the church can then become a vouchsafe for the state.
Right.
And the state can start using the church as a source for legitimacy.
Right.
While also kind of placing demands on the church. And historically, a lot of the times, what the state would do in order to get the church to comply was to collect revenue.
Uh-huh.
So tithes.
Right.
This still happens in Germany under something called the Landeskirchen. And what happens is that the alliance between the two institutions eventually starts to erode public trust.
Right.
because the people see the church as looking out for the interests of the state separate from the people.
Right.
And the state and its and the fate of the people belonging to it becomes so identified with the church that belonging to the church becomes a political statement.
That's right.
Right. So this is why when these historical figures like Franco, when they pass, suddenly the church is just empty. Because nobody wants to be associated with the person who maybe killed your neighbor's parents,
right?
Like, because Franco had used force. And this is still a hangover in Europe. There's this question of why did America have a religious revival after the Second World War, but Europe didn't? And the answer is because Europe had endured this problem, but America had this religious freedom.
Right.
And it was a religious revival that Catholics fully participated in. It was led by, you know, one of my heroes, Venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. So that's the problem.
We're out of time in this segment. I always enjoy my time with James here. I'm talking with Dr. James Patterson. He's the incoming Associate Professor of Public Affairs at the Institute of American Civics at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
This summer, take a vacation that lifts your spirit and soul. Join Corporate Travel for the annual Grand Getaway on beautiful Mackinac Island, August 3rd to the 5th. Experience historic Grand Hotel, powerful talks from Father Mike Schmitz, Steve Ray, Dr. Edward Sree, and Father Leo Padalinghug, plus live broadcasts with Teresa Tamio, daily mass, four-course dinners, and dancing. Faith, fellowship, and fun in one retreat. Only a few rooms remaining. Don't miss out.
Book this Ave Maria Radio trip now by checking the travel page on avemariaradio.net.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
Hi, I'm Father Chris Alar of the Marian Fathers of the Immaculate Conception. My new book, Understanding the Sacraments, unpacks the extraordinary gifts unique to the Catholic Church. Ever wonder why we baptize infants? Is confession in the Bible? And must wives be subordinate to their husbands? The answers to these more hot-button questions about the sacraments are on sale now from Marian Press at shopmercy.org. God bless you.
60 on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The Eighth Commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. At one level, the reputation a person has is one of their most precious gifts, and to intentionally harm the good reputation of someone is a very grave matter. We can do this often through detraction by disclosing others' faults without a valid reason, or calumny, just outright lying about other people, likewise through rash judgment. This commandment also protects the truth, which is another very, very great good. To lie is to speak something that we know is false with the intention of deceiving others. We ought to be dedicated to the truth. It is the truth that sets people free, while errors and lies entrap people in many difficult and often sinful situations. The Lord asks us to give witness to the truth of the gospel. This commandment therefore asks us to stay dedicated to the truth and to other people's reputation. The Eighth Commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
What three virtues are embodied in the First Commandment? The Catholic Catechism, paragraphs 2084 through 2086, tell us that the First Commandment encompasses the three theological virtues, faith, hope, and charity. In this commandment, God calls us to worship the Lord your God, and Him only shall you serve. When we say God, we confess our belief in a constant, unchangeable being, always faithful and just, without evil. It naturally follows that we accept His words and thus have complete faith in Him. Since He is almighty, merciful, and beneficent, How could we not place our hope in him? Finally, who could not love a Creator who has poured out his love, his goodness, and his gifts on us? This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Good afternoon, welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, talking with my friend Dr. James Patterson, incoming Associate Professor of Public Affairs at the Institute of American Civics at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. James, I want to pick up where we left off. So Gene Veith, he quotes you, I forget how it's pronounced, but he quotes you with a very salient point. Anyone who presupposes that, especially here in the United States, some kind of integralism can work doesn't have a firm grounding or understanding about how our Constitution and separation of powers is drawn up, because we've never had an aristocracy that had a kind of oligarchy. We've never had a church hierarchy calling the shots at the political level, sociopolitical level.
That's right.
It seems like an enterprise in futility.
Yeah, so, you know, this is something that one particular figure named Adrian Vermeule, who's a Harvard Law professor and an integralist, says is a failure of imagination. And the reason why he believes that they have a chance is that small, well-organized elites are able to get from government something much more easily than large majorities because of the problem of what's called the free rider problem.
Right.
Whereas as the number of people in a movement grow, the number of people who believe someone else will take care of a problem. So, but in a small group, no one thinks this. Everyone has to work and everyone will benefit from the outcome. Which is why they have, in that second part of post-liberalism I talked about before, they have these institutions that train young, faithful, but unfortunately misguided people to become part of, you know, the bureaucracy, the think tank world, 501c3 or you know, nonprofit world, so that once they've reached a critical mass of influence, they don't need to capture the majority.
Right.
What they need to do is call the shots on who gets nominated.
Right.
So if someone like J.D. Vance is as much of a post-liberal that he has claimed to be, it doesn't matter that they didn't persuade this large majority over here of all of this. What matters is that they got J.D. Vance nominated, so that's the only one they can vote for if they want to vote for a conservative candidate.
So as opposed to a kind of democratic capture and your policies ordered that way, you're looking at a anywhere from a persona to an institutional capture.
That's right, an elite capture. And he writes this at a blog or a subset called Post-Liberal Order. I think it's behind a paywall now, but it's on the poverty of political imagination. And I wrote a response to it in Providence saying the one thing that was unclear to me was what the benefits were that would drive people to it. And they have solved that problem. I mean, if you're going to go to Harvard Law School, you can, you know, be a student of Adrian Vermeule, and that's a very... It's a very prestigious thing to do.
So in your piece, No to Neo-Integralism, this was on, I think it was the Dispatch?
No, National Review.
You talk about how the problem with the Neo-Integralists is it presents this ideal on paper, akin to the kind of Marxist solution that we always see. But what they do is they subordinate individual agency. They subordinate structural innovation at the level of the individual for the sake of eventually what becomes technocratic governance. Help our listeners understand why that is.
So the shift is one where instead of the silence of the law being the liberty of the citizen, the silence of the law becomes the authority of the bureaucrat.
Right.
So if there is no explicit permission to do something, you should presume that it is against the law.
Right.
Until it is some bureaucratic agency has affirmed that you have the right to do something. And this runs so counter to the American constitutional tradition that it's hard to imagine someone willingly accepting it.
Right.
But, you know, like, when you become slowly acculturated to it, it's like the problem of boiling the frog, right? The frog doesn't jump out. So that would be kind of the idea they have in mind here. And so that's the stick part. The carrot part is... you're going to love all of the policies that we're going to put into place. And one of these is transforming the American welfare state into a family welfare state. So essentially formation of a right-wing welfare state.
Yeah.
And they get a lot of the ideas of this from family policy in places like Hungary. Even though the policies don't work, the idea is that we're going to change it so that people who form families get the welfare of individuals.
Right. Which, again, seems good on paper. You're incentivizing the nuclear family.
Yeah. But it doesn't work. And the reason is because what drives people to form families is faith in the future and a belief in, you know, be fruitful and multiply. It's actually more about a belief system. It's about a sense of public support in your community and a continuity of families. That money doesn't really do. In fact, that's one of the ironies of these policies is that they adopt what they consider a liberal idea of moving capital around. Yeah. It's like, isn't this what you're opposed to? and so, this is one of the funny things that about them is that they say, well, we're going to take away the freedom to act, and in exchange, we're going to drop loads of cash on you. And there's no guarantee that they'll actually do the latter.
Of course
but there's
not.
A lot of guarantees that they want to do the former.
Right.
Yeah.
John Brungott in Why Integralism and I think it's Why Integralism and Liberalism Failed or something to that effect, the book. Integralism fails when the avatars of Christendom confuse the kingdom for the horses that get them there. It's ironic that the very things that a conservative, a self-identifying conservative, would criticize in modern liberalism, you know, ideological liberalism, would be the very things they want to institute in an integralist framework.
Yeah, there's a, and you know, for name dropping, which I, you know, for your listeners, they should definitely look these things up. There's Timothy Troutner wrote for Church Life Journal something very similar, and he says that really integralism doesn't ever escape liberalism. It just repurposes the ideas
That's
in a kind of mirror image. Hence, what that you know, really, when I was talking about the use of capital, that was really just me riffing on Timothy's fantastic article.
Now, if I may draw our attention then to a kind of Chestertonian premise,
sure,
which is the liberal and the conservative diagnose the exact same problems in society. It's the solution that's a problem. And so we're seeing ideological liberalism swing to one direction without ratio, without reason,
yes,
without morality, without religion. And so the neoconservatives, the post-liberals, they see that the remedy is the pendulum swing to the other direction.
There's a quasi-mythic quality to what's called the march across the institutions, in which the left begins in the 1950s and then urgently in the 1960s to gain cultural prestige and influence, and then slowly enter into universities, nonprofits, governments. And what they hope to do is to repeat that process, but from the right. And
right.
So that's why they constantly talk about, for instance, Patrick Deneen saying Machiavellian means to Aristotelian ends.
Yeah, yeah.
Which inevitably becomes Machiavellian means to Machiavellian
ends. Yeah.
Right. But, you know,
history has always shown us that.
It's right, yeah. If I had the ring, I would, you know. But anyway, so enough of the Tolkien stuff. But, you know,
just toss it in the fire, Silvio.
No. So the thing about where was I?
Machiavellian means.
Oh yeah, Machiavellian means that they imagine that they'll be able to somehow institute something moral immorally. It's a fundamental violation of what everything the church teaches.
Yep.
But it's almost as if they're like a secret coterie of people who need to manage affairs this way.
Right.
That's, you know, a conspiratorial thinking that, you know, it's, again, very modern. But the thing about this mythic quality to the left and its march across the institutions is that it introduced a resistance to all of this that also achieved a lot of success, including things like ending the Cold War in the Soviet Union. But one last thing about this is that you brought something up that's important, and this is where I was trying to get back to, was that it makes complete sense to me that there are a large number of faithful, intelligent people who are, you know, potential leaders that would be attracted to this because the problems that you mentioned are all very true.
Yep.
And it's up to the church to provide a better path forward than this.
Yep.
In a way, they're filling a void.
Yep.
And I've been trying to do that by reminding people of Fulton J. Sheen.
Right.
And I know that there are others who are working on providing an alternative for the way forward. But, you know, for younger people, they don't have this. They have no memory of a period when Catholicism had social cachet.
Uh-huh.
I'm 45. I remember Pope John Paul II. I remember the fall of the Berlin Wall. I remember this, like, we did this moment. Catholics, like, were proud of this kind of contribution. And so even though there's this sort of decline, especially after the revelations in 2001, we at least had this moment. But if you're born in, like, 2002... You know,
you don't have the historical context.
No. All you have is the housing crisis and a bunch of bishops that covered stuff up.
That's
and
right.
And so they're looking for something else.
And that something else seems really appealing. But Catherine Stewart actually appeals to exactly what you said, that in a state that has become integralist, especially from a Catholic perspective, you're going to wind up getting two classes of citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
That should inherently cause us to balk, especially as citizens of this republic.
So this actually is a reality historically. In parts of Western Europe, and actually most of Europe, Jews were not allowed freedom of movement, and they were left in ghettos, did not have protections of property rights. And the church was kind of in a bad place on this for a long time.
Yeah.
And it only really fully grasped with the consequences of tolerating or even entertaining this approach after the Holocaust.
Right.
And so this two-class system was always a problem, and a lot of people resisted the integration of Jews into a more pluralistic society because they thought it threatened the possibility of Christendom, when really it was the attempt to exclude them that led to the destruction of Christendom, because they fostered a kind of common hatred against a certain group that promoted not the love of Christ, but rather the hatred of that man introduces through his sin.
That's right. James, thank you very much for making the time to speak with us.
Sure.
This was very good.
Thank you so much, Dr. Peter.
I've been talking with Dr. James Patterson, incoming Associate Professor of Public Affairs at the Institute of American Civics at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. We've been talking about the failures of post-liberalism and neo-integralism. Big words, but we have to learn what they mean and learn to dialogue. I'm Marcus Peter.